trying to hold the line. Can't. Here comes Garvin. Cross ice. And Michael Hutchinson absolutely robs Antoine Roussel. It is leather larceny.
Continuing our look throughout the NHL and where the Winnipeg Jets goaltending ranks, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Feel free to send us your comments on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Where do you think the Winnipeg Jets goaltending ranks among the 30 NHL teams? We continue on with the New Jersey Devils. Corey Schneider, of course, the former Manitoba Moose, is their starting goaltender, backed up by a relative unknown in Keith Kincaid. How do you rank the Devils goaltending compared to the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, it's better. Schneider's a really good goaltender, and there's more than a few teams who take them for their starter, and you saw obviously Lou Lamoriello wanting to replace Marty Brodeur with Schneider, trading what turned out to be the Bo Horvat selection for Vancouver. Got to feel confident with him between the pipes, and I think he's better.
Yeah, I mean, again, if we're taking Hutchinson and Pavlik versus the two of them, I would take the Jets' two goaltenders. But
really?
Both of those goalies are better than Keith Kincaid.
Yeah, but you got to look at it.
Kincaid's going to play like 12 games, what, 15 games,
right? But
right?
Again, I was looking at more so of, you know, an overall talent. But yes, Corey Schneider, again, if we're basing it on who's the best goaltender on either team, I'll take Corey Schneider.
New York Islanders have Yaroslav Halak as their starting goaltender. Their backup right now is either Thomas Greiss or Jean-Francois Berube for one game. So Halak is their real starter there. He's been injured to start the year, though.
I have it even. Halak is unpredictable. He's got skills. I don't love him. I don't hate him. The combination as a whole, I think it's equal just because, I mean, talent level is fairly even. I think the Jets may have more potential there, but I think they're on the even playing field.
Yeah, Richie, I'll go even too. Halak's been off to a good start. He's got a couple shutouts this year. But yeah, as a whole, I like Greiss actually as a backup. So I think they've got two solid goaltenders there. Halak just hasn't been able to do it in the playoffs, as Richie mentioned, so I'll go even.
Ottawa has Craig Anderson, veteran Andrew Hammond, came out of nowhere as a rookie last year.
Yeah, it's pretty even. I mean, two solid netminders there, the veteran and Hammond obviously with a great start. I think that's even. That's a pretty similar position when you're rolling into a game with those two guys and the Jets two guys.
Craig Anderson is such a steadying veteran influence for that team. He rarely has bad games, very solid goaltender. And as Richie mentioned, Andrew Hammond was one of the nicest surprises as far as goaltenders go last year. So I want to say the Jets a little bit, but I'll go even because, again, you have two goaltenders on each side.
Philadelphia Flyers, Steve Mason is their starting goaltender. Michael Neuwirth is their backup. How would you describe the Flyers' goaltending?
It's pretty similar. I don't love Steve Mason, but he's got potential and he's had good years. Last year was a good season. Neuwirth is, I mean, Moose fans remember him from the Calder Cup with the Hershey Bears there. Some talent, obviously, he hasn't really found a niche. Looking to find one in Philadelphia, and, you know, there are always seem to be possibilities to finding it in Philly. But I think it's not about an even playing field.
Yeah, I'm a bigger fan of Steve Mason than Richie.
Yeah.
Had a really good last year for the Philadelphia Flyers when they didn't make the playoffs, and has had a pretty decent start this year. So I'll say even.
The Pittsburgh Penguins, led by Marc-Andre Fleury and backed up by Jeff Zatkoff.
I mean, Jeff Zatkoff, more so on Fleury. I mean, people disrespect Fleury, and Fleury has struggled in the playoffs at times, but if you look at his career, and remember last year, guys, even last year, I mean, the guy had 10 shutouts last year, and they don't have a great defense. I still think Pittsburgh's goaltending is better than the Jets.
Yeah, I'll say Pittsburgh's defense is better. Goaltending is better than the Jets. Jeff Zatkoff was actually a Kings draft pick back in 2006. But yeah, I agree with Rich. I think Fleury has struggles in the playoffs, and people forget he's an excellent goaltender.
San Jose Sharks acquired Martin Jones in the offseason. This is his first opportunity to be a starting goaltender in the league. So far, the numbers are good. .938 save percentage, 1.74 goals against. He's backed up by Alex Stalock.
They are good, and I like what I've seen. I think the potential is certainly there to be even, but I think there's just not enough games to say, so I'm going to say the Jets are better right now, but that certainly could change.
Yeah, Martin Jones has been good for the San Jose Sharks, but as Richie mentioned, this is his first really time as a number one goaltender.
Teams haven't seen him twice yet.
And Andrei Pavlik, you know, especially with his finish to last season and the way Hutchinson has emerged over the last couple of years for the Jets, I think you got to go with the Jets.
in St. Louis. They've been searching for good goaltending.
Jets are better than St. Louis, Drew. I mean, they need to address the goaltending.
Brian Elliott and Jake Allen have each started five games this year.
Jake Allen has a little bit of potential. He struggled sometimes at big moments. I don't think Brian Elliott's especially good. I think the Jets' goaltending is better than St. Louis.
Yeah, I'll take the Jets over St. Louis, and I agree with Rich. You know, a couple of years ago, they went out and they acquired Ryan Miller, and they've gone back with Brian Elliott and Jake Allen. And I think Jake Allen, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually has more starts over Brian Elliott at the end of the season. Not terrible goaltenders, but I don't think you'd say that either of those guys are top 10, top 15 goaltenders.
In Tampa Bay, Ben Bishop led the Lightning to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. He's backed up usually by Andrei Vasilevsky, yeah, but he's injured. Right now it's Kristaps Gudlevskis as the backup.
Some talent there. I think Tampa's goaltending is better. Bishop does fight the puck at times. He's so darn big, though, that it's easier for him to be able to block as opposed to having to catch everything. I do think it's better. Their backup goaltending is talented as well when healthy, Drew.
Yeah, I don't know if Ben Bishop is head and shoulders above better than either Pavlik or Hutchinson, but Vasilevsky is an excellent backup, and Gudlevskis, you remember him, what he did in the Olympics for Latvia. So they've got three really good goaltenders there, so I'll take Tampa, too.
In Toronto, Bernier and Reimer, they continue to be the two goaltenders they have there.
I think it's even, Drew. I mean, Bernier is a really good player. Reimer is a solid backup. Bernier gets ripped, and I know Babcock's ripped both of them. and there's a contrast from what Randy Carlyle before, but Bernier's pretty talented, and they're pretty terrible defensively, especially the past couple years. So with Reimer and Bernier, overall, I think they're even. I think if you swap them, probably be similar. I mean, I think Bernier's probably the most naturally talented of the four, but I think it's even.
I'll take the Jets, and I think Jonathan Bernier has struggled with confidence, and James Reimer, a lot of people expected him to be traded, but he stayed there as the backup. I think Bernier is a little bit of a name right now, and he hasn't really lived up to his name, so to speak. And sure, the defense isn't really bad, but I don't know if Bernier steals enough games for that team, so I'll take the Jets goaltending.
And finally, the Vancouver Canucks, they're led by, of course, Ryan Miller, and backed up right now it's Richard Backman. Normally it's Jakob Markstrom.
Yeah, I think it's even. And Ryan Miller hasn't been lights out at all over the past number of years, but he's still a real good solid netminder. And you can take issue with him as you could with Pavlik. And Markstrom has to prove it more at the NHL level, not the AHL level. But I think overall it'd be pretty close to even.
Yeah, Bernier doesn't have a win this year, by the way.
For the Leafs, you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're also, it's not just in this 10-game span, right?
I'll say even for Winnipeg and Vancouver. Ryan Miller maybe isn't as dominant as he once was, but he's still doing an excellent job for the Vancouver Canucks. I'll go even.
Who have been very surprising, by the way.
The Canucks.
5-2-4.
Yeah, certainly been getting. They've been losing, they've been losing.
They're leading the Pacific Division.
Yeah, well, I mean, worst division in hockey, but still, they get, when they're losing, they're losing in overtime.
Yes,
so they get the
times.
Points. Yeah, that's a good way to keep losing if you're going to do so.
Overall, Drew,
yes,
I have 13 teams that I consider to be better than the Jets, clearly, in net. I have 5 teams I consider to be worse. So we've done this exercise, I think, in the mass number of years. I thought we had the Jets goaltending kind of in the bottom third, and I think it's moved to be still in that range, but the higher end of the bottom third, or the middle of the second tier of the 10 to 20. I think that's certainly an improvement. Do I think it's a product of system somewhat? Sure. But I think you can't take anything away from the goaltenders as well, who seem to have grown into their own and are giving the Jets a chance. Now, I know this season has certainly been only a few games here, but if this kind of play, not even at this level, but a little bit less, continues, the Jets are going to be in pretty good hands.
There you have it. That's our ranking of the Winnipeg Jets goaltending amongst the NHL's best. We figure they are sort of in the top of the bottom third, or the middle of the middle pack. Let's head to break. When we come back, Adam Proto is going to join us. We'll look around the NHL with Mr. Proto. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Third and final hour of this Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A reminder, a programming note, whatever you want to call it. NHL this week, Tuesday, upcoming this week, given that the Jets are in action on Wednesday and Thursday. So you can check us out Tuesday, 6 p.m. for NHL this week. This segment of the program brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys, for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Adam Proto. Adam is going to start covering the Maple Leafs for MapleLeafs.com. He also writes for the Hockey Writers, and he's really everywhere. Toronto Star, you can see him. Adam, are there any platforms you're not writing for right now?
Yes, there are quite a few. Probably nothing to do with the U.S. Republican Party. In terms of a positive outlook for them, but if you follow me on Twitter, that won't be a surprise to you. No, I'm happy to branch out and to do new things. And it was unfortunate I left THN, but at the same time, it kind of opens up new fields for you. And as I said, I guess yesterday, guys, with the unfortunate demise of Grantland, it seems to be a ritual for anybody in the business nowadays that you go through some bumps and eventually have to find your own way like everybody else.
Yeah, and you'll come out better on the other end of it for it, right, Adam?
I appreciate that. Thanks. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you just, you have to take the industry for what it is and be honest about what it is. And it's an industry that's in flux. And, I think it's a shame in some ways that we still have, dozens of journalism schools in this country because, the jobs just aren't necessarily there. And I wonder if we'd do better sometimes to teach young kids how to be, independent and to mobilize networks that usually lead to, at least crowdsource stuff. That seems to be the way of the future for a lot of the business. But for me, the opportunity with the Leafs came up and I was happy to try something new and see it maybe a little bit more from the inside. But I should say I'm still writing elsewhere, so I still feel like I have the ability to look around the league and that's kind of still always part of what I do. I'm always interested in all the teams that are part of the NHL and part of the best sport on earth.
Well, let's start with the Maple Leafs, and then we'll get to the rest of the NHL. I mean, the Mike Babcock era is underway in Toronto, and it's a bit of a struggle so far, 1-6-2 for the Maple Leafs. No surprise that they're not very good. Did you think that they were going to be this bad to start the season?
Yeah, I think management and I think a lot of people here were prepared for the worst and that's not a criticism of management. I think it's I've said that before. I was working for them guys. I think, you have to look at it as something that's really never been tried in Toronto, at least, over the long term, which is building slowly, building properly, and building while people, aim their arrows at you and wonder why the wins aren't coming or wonder why you got shellacked. By 6 or 7 goals in one game or those days I think are coming too. So, I think management and ownership most importantly are now, fully on side with, the notion that you just can't go out and trade for a player like a Jonathan Toews. You can't do it. You can't do it for Stamkos, can't do it for all the NHL's best stars. This is a draft, driven league and, to get in the mix for, Auston Matthews next year, you're going to have to be bad. There's just no way about it or no two ways about it. So, I think that's what Toronto fans are happy to deal with that after seeing, the shortcuts and the attempted runarounds, over the years in different manifestations. I think people are finally ready to say, okay, we're happy to take a few more years of lumps as long as it's about the process, as long as it's about building the way most other teams do to become Stanley Cup contenders. People are okay with that.
Adam, I'm not sure if you heard the last couple of segments, but we were going over the entire NHL and comparing the Jets goaltenders to the rest of the NHL, and we obviously talked about Toronto because they're in the NHL. And I thought that the Jets goaltending was better than Toronto's Jonathan Bernier and James Reimer. Jonathan Bernier specifically, it's amazing that he hasn't won a game yet this year. But the question for you is, when it comes to Jonathan Bernier, we know he's a good goaltender. He's got a lot of talent. But is he the right goaltender for this team going forward, considering that this is a young team? It's only going to get younger, and they're going to have their struggles.
Yeah, I don't think so, to be honest. I think you look at where he, where he fits. I mean, the team is clearly still happy giving him every chance to cement that number one job. But, every time there's a, an early goal let in or a soft goal, I think people are going to, to have that sensitivity to what's happened in the past. And some of that's unfair because, as we all know, he's playing in front of a defense that isn't going to be comparable to, you know, the St. Louis's of the world. When Chicago's healthy, they're, you know, in my mind, still deep and still very talented. So I think you have to give Bernier a lot of leeway in terms of what you expect from him, given the team that's in front of him. But I don't even know that he could make the argument that he's done enough to, you know, to really put himself in that upper echelon or even the middle echelon, to be honest. I think he's still got a ways to go to say that, hey, he's not, you know, he can steal you games. I'm not sure people can remember too many games here where he's stolen them for the Leafs. So I think he, you know, maybe in the back of his mind, whether he wants to admit it or not, probably understands that this team's best years are years down the road and probably when he won't be here. And he's just got to make the most of, you know, what the situation is. And if not, he's, you know, Mike Babcock, I guess, is, you know, he'll look to James Reimer. They may look to make a move. Hard to say, but I just think the general sense from I've got from talking to people over the years is that he's just still not, you know, in a position where you can look at him and say, this is the guy we traded for. This is the guy we hoped he would turn out to be.
Adam, you look at the Leafs and, you know, it's certain guys you identify as needing to have good seasons and how important it is. And to me, Morgan Rielly, even more so than Jake Gardner, stands out in terms of Mike Babcock wanting to play a certain way. And these guys are left-handed shooting, puck-moving defensemen, and kind of he built around in Detroit. How have those two defensemen fared, and which one do you think will be the one that Babcock leans on more?
It's a good question. I do think you're right. I think Morgan Rielly is, you know, held in higher regard, you know, amongst management, amongst the coaching staff, only because he's younger. People have seen less of him. You know, they still project his upside to be quite high. And that's not to say that, you know, they're not hoping they can kind of rehabilitate Jake Gardner, you know, back to kind of where he was when, you know, when he first got to Toronto and he was looking like, you know, that deal was looking, with Anaheim, was looking like an incredible steal. I think he's, you know, he got lost and he got lost his confidence clearly, I think, with the struggles that the team had, you know, and he still got an opportunity to, you know, to maybe cement himself in because he's under contract for a while. And, you know, he can make a difference. He's one of the guys that, you know, if he plays well, he's got a definite upside, I think, beyond a lot of his teammates. So, you know, I think in the long term, though, the Rielly Express is still, you know, where it's at with the blue line here in Toronto. I think you just have to talk to management, talk to people around the team, and they'll tell you that, you know, they still envision him as the guy who can be that rock. You know, a Brian Leetch type player, maybe. I think that's, you know, maybe where some people I've talked to see him, but, you know, that type of defenseman isn't somebody that they've had for quite some time. You know, I'm 43 and, you know, they had Brian Leetch for a couple of years or at least a year there and mm-hmm. didn't work out too well for them, but they just don't have that kind of rock, as you say, that, you know, patient, positionally sound, fleet of foot type of defenseman that can, you know, you could throw over the boards for upwards of 30 minutes, as you see now is almost a prerequisite for a lot of Stanley Cup, you know, bona fide Stanley Cup contenders guys. So I still think they're going to give him every chance. I think, you know, I think the proof would be if you ask people around the league, you know, could you see the Leafs trading Morgan Rielly, and people would say it would take a lot. I think if you said, could you see the Leafs trading Jake Gardner, people would say, absolutely, and it wouldn't. I don't know that it would take nearly as much. So I still think he's a little bit lower esteem, but not much. I think they still believe he can be turned around, much like the Antonov. I still think the Antonov is somebody they believe can, you know, kind of be rebuffed and rebuffered and sent back out to market to, you know, so that you can trade him without eating some more of that money off his contract. So I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, that management look at as reclamation projects, but Morgan Rielly is definitely not one.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Adam Proto. Adam covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for MapleLeafs.com. He covers the NHL for HockeyBuzz.com. And Adam, of course, the big return to Toronto this evening for Phil Kessel. We know the hot dog vendors outside the ACC are happy with his return. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like, you know, when he steps onto the ice for the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight?
Yeah, I think there'll be positivity for him in the building. Obviously, the team has chosen not to you know, to make a big deal out of it. And in some ways, I can kind of see what they're thinking. You know, the team wasn't overly successful. And I could even understand if it was a team that, you know, a Kessel team that he was on that made it to the Eastern Conference Final or something like that. But, you know, he really wasn't around for a great deal of overall team success. And that's no slight against Phil. I think, you know, I think I've said it before, guys, maybe on your show too, that he reminds me of a Brett Hull type of character, right? Where, you know, nobody was going to rightfully build a team around Brett Hull. I think you saw him as an excellent complementary piece. And somebody that can, you know, can be that final piece of the puzzle on a team that already has, you know, somebody strong down the middle and really that kind of upper echelon player that there are only two or three of every year or two, I think. So, you know, he's probably happier where he is now, even though the Penguins have struggled a little bit to make things work. Kind of, you know, from a personal basis, it was hard for him to really let any side of himself show. I think he was painfully shy when he was here, and obviously Toronto's not a market where, you know, that can help you. I think some people saw it as aloofness, some people saw it as, you know, disinterest, and I think that was unfair to him. But at the same time, I think, you know, you have to recognize the market you're playing in and not just kind of shirk from it because, you know, the team lets you or because the team wants you to get at it whenever you can. You kind of have to push yourself and allow yourself to be pushed a little bit around you. And sorry, I've got barking dogs here.
We have a haunted house here too, don't worry.
That's right. No. So they, I think they're ready to move on as a franchise. And, you know, I think it makes sense for Phil as well, because he's, you know, he deserves a chance to win with a team that understands how to use him.
Adam, just don't let them off the leash, because we've done that with Drew before and it didn't work out very well. So
they just see somebody coming home in the driveway, going bananas.
You know, Adam, the Jets are in Toronto, of course, next week to play the Maple Leafs, and a lot of Jets fans are going to see a Leafs team that is completely different than last year. Of all the players that the Leafs brought in, whether it's a guy like Brad Boyes, who was signed off of a PTO, or if it was via trade, a guy like Nick Spaulding, who came over from Pittsburgh, who's impressed you most? Who's made the biggest impact in fitting in with this Leafs team? I know they've struggled, but what's been your sense of all of the new forwards, especially on the Leafs?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for me, guys, he's not quite as new as everybody else, but Daniel Winnick has just, you know, kind of stepped back seamlessly into that role. I think not just in on the ice, but, you know, I think in the dressing room, people kind of see him as a rock, and this is somebody who understands that, hey, he may get dealt again by the time it's all said and done, and used to kind of help build this team up. But, you know, I think the genius of Brendan Shanahan and what he's done very well so far is to kind of let people buy into, you know, what the overall bigger picture is, which is that kind of slow build, you know, the idea that he's not going to take shortcuts. And if that means, you know, moving some guys and leading, you know, to a legacy that leads to an eventual cup win, I think, again, everybody will be happy with being a small part of it. And if Daniel Winnick realizes that he was traded twice to help get them there, I think you can sell a guy on that type of legacy. So, you know, I think Winnick is just somebody who's he's a professional NHL player. He's not an elite NHL player. And I know, you know, Spaulding and some of the other guys have looked, you know, for even a flash or two, a shift or two, like they, you know, they've got something to offer. But I think with Winnick, it's just he's pretty consistent at what he does. He understands the way the game is played, and I think when you're having a team in transition and a team that's trying to move some young players up and see what they've got, you know, to have him around, I think is not invaluable, but it's you know, quite appreciated by management.
Final question for you, Adam. You look at the Toronto sports landscape, obviously the Jays have been eating up a bunch of the headlines, both positive and now recently negative. The Raptors are 2-0. Everybody knows the Leafs are terrible and are likely going to be terrible all season. How much attention are they really getting from the fans in the market right now?
Yeah, I think they've been a little bit under the radar, to be honest. I think they, and I think Mike Babcock's spoken to that even, right, saying that he can, probably move around the city a little bit easier than he could if none of that stuff was happening. But for sure, the way the Jays played, I think, was pretty remarkable. Just the kind of soap opera ups and downs that you had that, and I think people have said this too, guys, that really weren't even there in the World Series years. I mean, they were to a degree, but this was, this is something different. I think it just kind of awakened, you know, a new generation of kids to, you know, to what Toronto can look like with a real, genuine winning team. And it's fun to be a part of. I know the rest of the country enjoys hating us a little bit, and, you know, some of that we bring on ourselves for sure. But at the same time, I think Toronto is a pretty great city. It's a multicultural city. And when you start to see people of, you know, of different faiths and ethnicities and people like that coming together to, you know, to celebrate what makes us common, it kind of makes you excited for, you know, what could happen if the Leafs did the same thing. Because I think, you know, even the most fervent Jay supporter would acknowledge that, you know, if that day comes that they are, you know, in an Eastern Conference final, in a Stanley Cup final, you know, it's going to dwarf anything like the Jays have done. It will be, you know, a case where you shut the city down from Oshawa on the one side to probably Mississauga on the other side, and it's just pandemonium, you know, from wall to wall. So I think for now they've you know, have been pushed to the back a little bit, but now that the Jays are done, and with this negativity, as you say, you know, the focus is going to turn back to them really quickly.
Adam Proto covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for MapleLeafs.com. You can also read his work at the Hockey Buzz or HockeyBuzz.com. Adam, appreciate your time. Glad to have you back on an NHL beat, and we'll do it again real soon.
I appreciate the kind words, guys. Thanks again for having me on.
Thanks very much, Adam. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. To head down to here to TSN 1290 studios, where there is a fantastic haunted house going on.
Size Burpee? Oh, sorry, you might have a costume. You might have a different
name.
Yeah,
you wouldn't know who he is. He's in costume.
Well, no, there's someone dressed up as Ace Burpee, but Ace Burpee's also there.
Yeah, it's different. It's exactly. Yeah.
Oh, there's somebody dressed as Ace. Yeah. Oh, okay, that's good. I mean, you can't hear it on you can't hear it on air, but in the background,
they're
screaming and yelling, and it sounds like it's a really good haunted house going on behind us here. Here at TSN 1260. So head down to Pembina Highway before you go
1260.
Out.
1260. Did you say 1260?
No, I said 1290. Maybe okay. I said 1260.
I'm
going
to
be. It could be. I'm going on our sister station TSN 1260 in Edmonton in about an hour. So I was telling Ezzy that. So I may have crossed up my radio stations. But anyway,
someone's doing well. By the way, this Starburst is delicious.
Yeah.
By the way, Richie, you came back with a bunch of candy, and I noticed that you got a couple suckers there.
Well, I guess you got two suckers right beside me.
Saw that joke coming.
But you got a Snickers and...
That's a caramel, actually.
A caramel, and there was a...
How do they put the caramel in the caramel bar?
That's always
nobody asked about that anymore.
The big secret. Yeah. Anyways, let's look at some injuries throughout the NHL. We started in Edmonton, as we mentioned, the Edmonton Oilers. Justin Schultz out 2 to 4
Should we talk
weeks.
About Connor McDavid not producing?
Fifth in the league in scoring.
Did I ever... That's not what I said. That's never what I said in
keep
my
going,
defense.
Drew, keep going.
You know, you just throw me under the bus with false accusations there, Richard. Anyways, Justin Schultz out 2 to 4 weeks for the Oilers with a back injury. You know, the Oilers defense wasn't very good to begin with,
true.
And now it's you know, even worse without Justin Schultz, yeah. Although he's much more offensively inclined than he is defensively inclined.
That's true, Drew, but that's been the yeah, you're absolutely right. That's been the pleasant surprise for the Winnipeg Jets quickly. No injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, aside from Sherratt, I mean, that's the one I think they can afford the most, to be honest.
It's two
maybe
games.
In the fourth line. But let's be honest, that has been a huge part of the Jets' success thus far, is you're playing with a full roster, and it's great. The Jets, obviously the injuries last year, but their top-end guys are reliable, and they play, you know, Ladd, Little, Wheeler, don't miss many games, and that's a huge thing. Now, you talk about Justin Schultz. Sure, he hurts, because it hurts. It hurts your ability to create offense. And
you know, hang on, Ezzy. It's going to be very difficult for you to chime in on this topic while you're chewing on a Starburst.
But Richie's talking now. I'll finish the Starburst and then continue. Look, I'm talking right now.
They can tell that you're eating Starburst.
Yeah, or you're a horse and you're chewing on your cud. I'm not sure which it is.
It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt not having Schultz in your transition game and your power play and all that. And, you know, you have an Edmonton roster that you need to be able to exploit the speed that you have up front against the other teams. And without... Puck moving. Now, again, does he give it back in his own zone? For sure. But that's a significant injury.
In Florida, Alexander Barkov out 2 to 4 weeks with a broken hand. He won't need surgery, which is the good news. But, you know, another loss for the Florida Panthers, who've been they've been average to start the year.
Sure. The thing that you miss most about Barkov, and the thing about people don't realize about Sasha Barkov, is his ability to play a two-way game. He's especially solid defensively, and for a center, and for a young center, knows his role, makes his teammates better. That's a huge loss, Drew. That's one of their top two centers, him and Bukestad. That's a big loss. And he creates offense. He's a good passer, but he's very good defensively. And they can't really afford to lose him. Trocheck's been a very pleasant surprise for them. I think he's been what Dave Bolin, they thought Dave Bolin would be when they backed up the truck for him.
Mm-hmm.
But still having Barkov there certainly gives you some nice three young centermen.
Vincent Trocheck is 4 goals, 5 assists, and 9 points in 10 games for the Panthers.
Barkov was 6-7, is he?
Yeah, and Barkov's an excellent player, and Rich mentions that he's got an underrated two-way game, but you know he's an excellent offensive performer for that team, only in his second full-time year right now. So it's a huge loss, especially with Florida, who doesn't have a lot of depth, Drew. Once you get past those top two lines, they've been struggling. They've improved their offensive game, but it's a team that I think, you know, struggles to trade chances with the more skilled teams in the East and the bigger and stronger teams in the East, and that's why kind of they're still developing into a good team. I think they're a couple of years away. But when you talk about Bjugstad and Barkov and Huberdeau, and I know Jager's done a nice job there, Ekblad on the back end. I mean, this has the makings, Richie, of a good team. They have to make some acquisitions. Dale Tallon has done a nice job of making certain acquisitions, but depth is the issue there.
And I've watched them play. I've probably watched 4 Florida games this year, and they've played 10. I've probably watched 4 Florida games this year, and I would say...
You scouting for them?
No, but I've been watching their games happen to be on, and I have to tell you, Drew, I mean, they're 5-4-1, but I think that's deceiving. I think they're better than that.
In Detroit, they have 2 injuries of concern.
They're +10 on the goal differential.
Yeah. In Detroit, they have 2 injuries of concern. Mike Green out 2 to 3 weeks with an upper body injury. And Brad Richards remains out with a back injury. And he's gone to see a specialist regarding that.
That hurts. It hurts because Riley Sheahan hasn't been able to carry the load offensively. Whether he's ever able to do that, I doubt that. But are they trying to push him into the role that Brad Richards had? Could be a problem. Datsyuk obviously being out is a huge problem, too, sure, in terms of the roster. Mike Green hurts. I mean, they do have puck-moving defensemen on the outside end that they can move in. On the outside, excuse me, that they can move into the inside. So they've been able to get by without him in the past few years, but it's still a significant injury. Richards hurts in terms of playmaking, and it just hurts more so, as I mentioned, because of Datsyuk. But, I mean, Richards isn't what he once was. But they're 2 free agent signings, right? So they thought they would complement the players and complement you know, the scoring up front and the puck moving in the back end and the power play. So they're not insignificant. And the Red Wings aren't being able to create right now. You look at them, Drew. 23 goals in 10 games.
Yeah.
That's not very Red Wing-like.
Well, the bottom 6 of the Red Wings, as you can chime in here, is combined for a grand total of 3 points.
Which is really surprising because there's more talent there than that.
Yeah.
And it's been as of late that they've been struggling. They started the season, the first 4 or 5 games, they were okay, but they've kind of struggled here, and the goaltending hasn't been there. Injuries, Richie mentioned Datsyuk. You know, Richards and Green coming over in the off-season was really to give them that veteran presence and kind of solidify that depth, because it's a very young team. Timu Pulkkinen's another guy that came in along with Dylan Larkin. A lot of talent there. I mean, I still think the Red Wings are a playoff team, but I think right now they're going through struggles. You know, new coach. It's not a completely new system, but you've had a lot of turnover there when you think of all the youngsters coming into the lineup and, you know, guys like Danny Cleary, for example, mm-hmm. leaving. And on the back end, you know, it's been a work in progress there. I mean, aside from Cronwall, you haven't had a lot of you know, consistency there. You know, I know Brendan Smith and Danny DeKeyser, a good defenseman, Jonathan Erickson, but I mean, this Red Wings defense was always a top 3, maybe even the best defense in the NHL. Richie, you're talking about, you know, 5 or 6 years ago now, but you know, it's still a really good team. So luckily those guys aren't going to be out too long, but yeah, I'm sure, you know, Jeff Blashill is a little bit concerned about the way they've played as of late.
Brandon Prust of the Vancouver Canucks, he was acquired in the offseason from the Montreal Canadiens. He's actually had a decent start to the year with 5 assists in 9 games. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks now with an ankle injury.
The tough one was that he got 2 assists in his first game against the Habs since the trade and gets injured in the first period after registering the 2 assists. You know, he's an identity guy, Drew. I mean, will they miss him on the ice? Sure, they miss him in the room more and miss his toughness. He's a character guy. I mean, he's probably not as got as much in the tank as he did before just because of the way he played, but well-respected. And, again, Vancouver team, that's the prize so far.
And the final one, Ezzy, we'll let you chime in because it's the New Jersey Devils. Tua Marutu out 4 to 6 weeks with a fractured foot.
Yeah, well, Marutu is just not that good at this point in his career. That's not a significant injury for the Devils. They're playing the Islanders this afternoon, tied up at 2. The Devils have really surprised me, and, you know, they've won... they won 3 games in a row, and, you know, it's a team that, even though you got a lot of youth there, You know, it's the old guys that are carrying the load offensively. Adam Henrique, Michael Camilleri, Travis Zajac, and then you're starting to get some contributions from unlikely sources. Lee Stempniak has been excellent for the New Jersey Devils coming over there on a PTO. So, I mean, they're going to lose, you know, you lose Tuomo Ruutu, but he just hasn't been good the last couple of years. He was awful last year. So it's a guy, a former first-round pick, that just hasn't
traded
panned out.
Andrew
so
Ladd.
You're not going to miss him that much.
Traded for Andrew Ladd. One thing, Drew, I know Nazi's point there, a guy like Ruutu gets hurt, it opens the door for somebody on a young team that needs to get better. So, I mean, you don't hope for an injury, but it's not the worst thing.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look back at 10 years. It's amazing. It's been 10 years of Crosby and Ovechkin. We'll talk about which future is brighter between those two gentlemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Malkin on the left wing board. Near side to Crosby. Richter. Hey! Chosen scored from the top of the right circle.
And on to Kuznetsov. As he's checked on the puck, a turnover is brought. Ovechkin scores!
Shortly past 2:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I got it right this time. Didn't say 1260.
That's true.
TSN 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town after two amazing weeks, Rob Pugh is at Rumors. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. 10 years, gentlemen. It's amazing. It's been 10 years now of Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin making their NHL debuts in October of 2005. Crosby had the better of the two careers in spite of the injuries? And is the Stanley Cup the difference between those two players right now?
I think that's part of it, guys. And I think it's interesting because Alex Ovechkin, I think, based on pure offensive skill, is the better player than Sidney Crosby. I think as an overall hockey player, Sidney Crosby has been and is still a better hockey player. Taking their careers as a whole, Drew, I mean, Alexander Ovechkin has not had the Stanley Cup success, and he hasn't, quite frankly, had the international success. Even though Sidney Crosby struggled at the 2014 Olympics, guys, he still has a gold medal around his neck from that, right? So he's got a couple of gold medals. He's got the gold medal from the World Juniors. If you remember, when the World Juniors was in Grand Forks, Canada beat Russia, and Alexander Ovechkin was on the bench crying after that game, if you remember that. Ovechkin is an elite player. I mean, if you ask anybody who is the most dangerous player in the NHL, when the puck is on their stick with a few minutes to go, Richie, and the game is tied or there's less than a one-goal lead or whatever, I mean, Alexander Ovechkin is going to be the most dangerous player. I mean, he's that good, right? And he is a perennial 50, 60-goal scorer. Sidney Crosby has struggled the last couple of years, both in the regular season and the playoffs. Last year, Crosby was only, what, 5 or 6 points behind Jamie Benn for the scoring title. But that's not a good year for him because this is a guy who scored 120 points in the NHL before. And so the expectations, Richie, for Crosby are higher. As far as the defensive side of the game, his vision on the ice, I think his leadership qualities, all of those other things aside from just the goals and assist totals, I think Crosby's a better player. But Alexander Ovechkin is a more dynamic and dangerous player. But yes, over the course of his career, I would say Crosby, I know it's the funny chant, Crosby's better, but Crosby has been better than Ovechkin. But the last couple of years, and I think under Barry Trotz, Richie, Ovechkin has refined the defensive side of his game. I don't think it's, I mean, he's not Sergei Fedorov yet as far as being that excellent two-way forward, but he's gotten better for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he never will be. Never will be. I mean, this is an ongoing debate, right? Because the careers certainly aren't over. 10 years in, I think Crosby's probably had the slightly... Crosby's had a better career. I mean, let's take into account international competition, two gold medals, and you're looking at the two gold medals in the two Olympics he competed in and the Stanley Cup. Even when the Cup, he wasn't as good as maybe he was had been at other times. I don't think Ovechkin, that can be... just Ovechkin's lack of playoff success. Well, you know, it's the team game, all that. Sure, I mean, there were game sevens where his team completely didn't show up. And there were game sevens that he's lost, that a goal or two would have won. Ovechkin's been the better goal scorer more physical player. Crosby's a better all-around player, better passer. He defers too much now and passes too much. And I think they need a new coach there to light a fire under his butt.
He's got to shoot more.
Yeah, he's got to shoot more for sure.
I know it's a cliche, but it's true, though.
I agree. He's got to really be more assertive for sure. Maybe the concussions are an issue, all that. I think Crosby's had the more successful career, but Ovechkin's very close, and Ovechkin's the best goal scorer of this era for sure.
Can you make the argument, you know, as they enter into the last, you know, let's say they each have another 10 years. It's probably a little bit high, but let's say, you know, 8 to 10 years left in their careers. Can you make the argument that Ovechkin is better equipped to handle the latter half of their careers?
No, I would actually disagree with that.
Even with Crosby's concussion issues?
Well, maybe the concussion issues certainly are a factor, Drew, but the goal scorers age in a different way than playmakers do. And so if Ovechkin loses that ability to get into the open spots and fire his shot and all that stuff, that's going to hurt his ability to put up points more so than Crosby with the puck on his stick, still finding the open guy, which he does better than anyone.
And I think, you know, the way Crosby has changed his game, I think...
I don't think it's a good thing, though.
Well, I mean, he's only got one goal in 10 games so far this year. And he's struggled. And that's a function of not only has the line not been very good, but he hasn't been shooting enough. And the team hasn't been playing well.
Doesn't that play into, Ezzy, like the whole idea of the, oh, you know, he's coaching a good team, so that's why he's going to win. It's not always the case.
No, I don't think so either, Richie. And
I think again, I don't want to pick on Mike Johnston here, but Ovechkin needed Trotz there to change things. Mm-hmm. They need a coach there to change things for him.
Look, Crosby's got 5 points in 10 games, which I think everybody would say is a pretty lousy start. But digging even deeper into that, those 5 points have all come in 2 games. He's gotten 8 games out of his first 10.
We're talking about 10 years here, not 10
games.
I know.
I'm just talking about this year, looking at it just in the small sample size. At some point in time, you know, and I didn't want to say, you know, have a segment with the title, What's Wrong with Sidney Crosby, because that's still, even to me, that's a little ridiculous.
Oh, I think it's fair.
You think it's fair to have
100%,
a segment?
100%.
Well, and then what is the biggest problem in your mind, the coaching right now?
I think coaching is an issue. I think he feels like the team is going nowhere. And I think that plays into his almost apathetic. I think Ovechkin thinks he is a team of winning cup. I mean, I picked him to win the cup, that team, so I agree with that. I don't think Pittsburgh has that same awareness or confidence that the Washington Capitals do. Maybe rightfully so, but the Pittsburgh Penguins have a heck of a good forward group. Mm-hmm. And they have defense that is not great, but they have a really good goaltender and a mover, too. Again, they've been trading picks and such, so they're less leveraged, but there's room to move there. And I just don't see it. I mean, he defers too much. He's got to be more assertive. He needs a coach that can get in his face.
Well, at what point in time, Ezzy, does Sidney Crosby, you know, using the back channels that are available to all players, and especially to superstar players, start making demands of this organization? Because this is an organization that's been treading water.
To who? They're up for sale. Well, I mean, who knows? A GM who's there for a cup of coffee. I mean, nobody.
That's the problem.
It's a mess.
Right. And they bring in Phil Kessel. Mm-hmm. So that's a big move, right? So you bring in someone to give you a premier winger to put with Sidney Crosby, Richie. And he struggled early on. I think
Crosby's hard to play with, though, is he?
I think Sidney Crosby, it's pretty clear that he has struggled dating back to last year's playoffs and during the regular season at times. And, you know, Richie makes a good point. Barry Trotz is a better coach than Mike Johnston. I mean, Mike 100%. Johnston had no NHL experience. He came from the Portland Winterhawks, right? And I don't know enough about him. I think at times this team struggles with a bit of identity, and I think, you know, they're not hard to play against. They're not hard to play against, Rich. They're not a hard team to play against. Even though you have all this skill, if Crosby and Malkin aren't going, it's pretty easy to shut down some of the other players. I mean, Chris Kunitz is a good player, but he's regressed a little bit. And they've got other good players. David Perron's a good player, but Crosby and Malkin are your elite players. And, you know, you traded Brandon Sutter to kind of change the team a little bit. Bonino's a speedy forward, but this isn't the team that won the cup in 2009.
There's nothing to him. There's no identity.
Right. And so, but Crosby specifically is still one of the best players in the NHL, if not the best player. And I think, you know, to Richie's point, I think things have stagnated a little bit there in Pittsburgh. And is this a team that's just going to, I mean, they're 6-4 right now. So they're in the playoffs, and they should be in the playoffs when April rolls around, Drew. Wow, but kind of what are the expectations? Winning the first round? Winning the second round? I don't think this team's winning the Stanley Cup this year.
You know, based on, it just seems like there were, I mean, they've been wasting Sidney Crosby for the last number of years.
10 years and one cup between the two of them is a big disappointment, I'd say.
Sure. I mean, the skill set has been there, but I mean, Pittsburgh's at least gone, you know, they went to that other cup against Detroit the first time when they lost to them. But since then, I mean, Washington, you know, this is, they're almost sort of mirror images of each other right now in that Washington had that, or Ovechkin had that chunk of time, those, you know, 3-4 years where, you know,
that, you're right about
where
that.
Dale Hunter was their coach and they had no identity and they were just sort of going through the motions.
I mean, they had an identity with Dale Hunter, but just wasn't maybe the right one. Right. No, they made it to the conference finals with him, didn't they?
Yes, but they were going through, Ovechkin seemed to be going through the motions.
Yes.
Whereas now he seems rejuvenated.
Yes, I agree with that.
Whereas Crosby now seems like he's going through the motions.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's a fair assessment.
And there's just, there's no end in sight for them getting back on the train because, like you said.
But what are you waiting for? I mean, the difference is for that we're talking about, Drew, is that Ovechkin might have gone through to 26-27 and Crosby's going through now at 28-30.
Yeah.
28-29-30. I mean, how many more years are you going to have here of this prime ability to win?
That's why I agree with you that they're wasting him, and it doesn't help that they have, you know, Jim Rutherford as the general manager who was only going to be there for 2 years, and then they were going to, well, who knows what the hell they were going to do at that point in time, and now they are up for sale. Everything about it is a bad situation.
You know, comparing Crosby and Ovechkin over the last 10 years, it's fascinating, right? I think what's so remarkable is that as we stand here, October 31st, 2015, I guess we're sitting, not standing, but Alexander Ovechkin is 20 goals away from 500.
Yeah.
At 28 years old, sorry. I mean, 500 goals. I mean, he should be able to get to 700 easily.
Oh, sure. I mean, he's a premier. 700
easily.
He gets 700.
Whoa.
You don't think he can do it in the next 4 years if he has another 40, 50 goal seasons ahead of him?
A lot of goals.
It's almost a five. He's going to pass 500 this year, Rich, easily.
I know, but it's different scoring them in your mid-20s than in your early 30s.
Sure, but he doesn't seem to be, you know, slowing down at all right now.
How many goal scorers are able to age like that, Drew?
I know, but I mean, Ovechkin is, and he's a generational player.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'd be surprised. That's a high number. Many seasons?
He's got,
I mean,
750 goal years?
Yeah.
And I know his goal totals will decrease.
It's only, you know, if he's got 50 goals, he's got four more 50-goal seasons in him.
It's a lot of 50-goal seasons, Drew.
Well, I know it's a lot, but, I mean, it's not going to be, he's not, you know, needing those when he's, you know, 35, 36, 37.
How many do you think he ends up with?
Well, how many do I think? I don't think he ends up with much more than, I think it may be 750, 760. He's at, you know, I don't think it's impossible. Right now he's at 480.
Well, I just said that.
I know. I'm just repeating it again. You don't think he's got another 250 goals in him?
So 250. You think he plays 10 more seasons? So you think he gets 25 a year?
I don't think it's an unreasonable number. It depends if he wants to play that many more years, I think is also a factor. He's also been, I mean, Ovechkin for the most part has been pretty injury free. You know, he hasn't had very many games where he's been banged up or any of his injuries have not been of a serious nature.
You realize that he went through 2010 you talked about those years, 2013 with not getting more than 38 goals.
I know, but those were his down years. Those were the years where
those
are years where he's not even that committed.
That's an interesting debate, though.
But regardless if he ends up with 670 or 770, he almost has 500 goals and he's not even 30 years old yet.
Oh, there's no question that he's a slam dunk Hall of Famer, the best goal scorer of this generation. You could even argue top two or three goal scorers of all time.
Mm-hmm. I think you can definitely make that argument. It'll be interesting, though. I mean, you know, he seems like he's just aging better, and he's getting better, you know, as the years go by. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Crosby for the remainder of this season as this Pittsburgh Penguins team sort of just continues to, you know, you can almost use the word flounder.
Well, they're just going through the motions. They are 6-4 on skill. They're even in terms of goal differential. You watch them play, there's not much to them. But you can still get by in a pretty poor or top-heavy Eastern Conference when you play on skill when you have that much of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, time will tell. Let's head to break when we come back. One final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for this Saturday afternoon. Of course, following us, H&L, then Rick Ralph. Richard will be back to join Rick for the pre- and post-game show. And then the three-headed monster of Bayak, Edmonds, and Nidy have the call for you from the Jets and the Blue Jackets in Columbus later on.
Do they like it when they call you a monster?
Well, I think it's fitting with it being
Halloween. Or when you call them a monster, sorry?
It's Halloween, it's fitting. It's when I do it on the other days that they probably, you know, might be a little offended by the whole thing, but that's okay. Programming note, Tuesday, of course, NHL this week, 6 p.m. We'll look back at the Blue Jackets and the Habs game and get you set for the Leafs and the Senators games on Wednesday and Thursday.
Rapid Fire.
rapid fire for this Saturday afternoon. Speaking to reporters after the Anaheim Ducks concluded their recent disappointing road trip, Ducks GM Bob Murray said the following: "I really don't like commenting on rumors, but I will say this. We were one game away from the finals, the Stanley Cup finals, just 5 months ago. So while this has been a terrible start, I'm not inclined to make rash changes. I'm going to be patient. That said, we are severely underperforming as a group. I can't recall a time where a vast majority of our players have underachieved simultaneously, and I fully expect a turnaround." Do you think Bob Murray struck the right tone with his comments, or do you think that this is the dreaded vote of confidence for a head coach before the proverbial kiss of death?
I don't know, Drew. I don't think, I told you last week, I don't think Boudreaux should lose his job, but obviously another week's gone by and they haven't really gotten much better. You're 1-7-2 now, so you're walking a fine line there. I don't think Murray wants – I think it's clear Murray doesn't want to fire Boudreaux, but I think if they get to 1-10 or something like that, we talked about that last week, he might be between a rock and a hard place. But at the same time, if you get – like if they get that bad, they might be out of it.
Sure.
For a team that's loaded up for this year with veterans who are not going to be that good on getting paid. Bieksa and Kessler are going to be overpaid, if not now, very soon. So it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's remarkable that they've only won one game. But if you look at their games coming up, they play Nashville next on Sunday. But you've got some easy games after that. Florida, Columbus, San Jose, Arizona. San Jose probably the hardest one out of those four games after Nashville. So maybe Bob Murray's looking at that and saying, okay, well, you know, maybe if we win four or five of these games. I agree with Rich. I don't think any GM wants to fire their coach, especially Bob Murray with Bruce Boudreaux, who's done an excellent job almost getting them to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. So, but they got to start winning games. I mean, they're last in the West. They're just not scoring. Getzlaf is injured right now. I know that, but they got to get it going quickly. They had to get it going quickly last week, Drew, and they've still struggled. So it's a tough situation there.
It's sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. To your point there, Richie, if he continues to wait and they continue to struggle, is there even a point in firing him at that point in time? Yeah. Because they're so far out of it at that point. Just, I mean, it's real difficult, real weird situation there.
You're not going to give up a pick for any of the coaches unless you're really stupid.
Well, maybe you wait till after the next general managers meetings where they're supposedly going to look at the compensation issue and decide again.
Well, apparently Bettman kind of did this all to, and I actually don't disagree with it because I think the policy is ridiculous.
Of course it is. Speaking to Denver radio station 104.3 The Fan earlier this week, Avalanche coach Patrick Waugh defended his team and their slow start to the season by saying, "I'm looking at all our games we've played so far, and out of our eight games, in seven of them, we were either ahead, even, or one goal down. Only two times were we down two goals down in those seven games. Are you expecting the Avalanche to turn things around, or is this a franchise in need of a more significant roster shakeup?"
Well, I guess the question is, what would that be? You've traded Ryan O'Reilly. You trade him for a young defenseman who's going to take time to develop, and Nikita Zadorov, and you've brought in Boschman to insulate and help the defense. Sure, that's going to help a little bit, but I don't think you have the talent to be a playoff team, so what are you turning around is the question. I think guys like Alex Tanguay and Ginla are guys you want to move because you want to get younger and realize that you're trying to win for the future, and I think both those guys have value. But I don't think – I mean, I know he's trying to protect the young guys, but at some point the young guys have to start protecting him.
Yeah, and Richie, the Avalanche have enough time to turn the season around, but they're already 6 points – out of a playoff spot right now.
It's an impossible division,
isn't it? It's a tough division, as we know, and you're leaving a lot of points on the table. And Patrick Waugh, his job is safe with his relationship with Joe Sakic for now. But you look at the last couple of years, and it's been very disappointing after winning the division 2 years ago. So much skill on that team, but it's almost a little bit of a imbalance as far as a lot of skill up front. And, you know, on defense, they have the pieces there, but they haven't been able to put it together. There's kind of a contrast in styles a little bit in Colorado with what they're trying to accomplish on a nightly basis. Sometimes you see a kind of a offensive team. I mean, losing to Carolina twice in a row is unacceptable. I mean, they should be beating a team like Carolina. Sure, Carolina plays hard, but those are games you got to win, right? So, you know, it's unfortunate, those comments. I mean, he's obviously going to stick up for his team, Drew. I thought the Avalanche would be better this year, quite frankly.
Phil Kessel returns to Toronto tonight for the first time since his trade to Pittsburgh and last year's calamity of a season. What is your favorite memory on or off the ice of Phil Kessel's years in Toronto?
Phil Kessel gets, I mean, Phil Kessel is what he is. He's a guy who focuses on goal scoring. That's all he cares about. Generally doesn't listen to coaches, but still scores goals. And people tried to make him something that he wasn't. I have to say my best memory of Phil Kessel, I thought he played very well in that playoff series against Boston, against Chara, when they were trying to get Boston, was trying to get those matchups. And for all the criticism of him and his stats were pretty good, I thought that playoff performance, when he was generally ripped for, you know, not being a big-time performer, was what I remember most about him.
Yeah, I don't know if I have one specific memory, Drew, but, you know, whether it was 3 or 4 years ago when he had the 80-85 point season, I mean, he was a dominant winger in the NHL. He's a great player. Last year, obviously, was a nightmare for him and the entire team.
He can't be your best player. But he cannot be your best player.
You know, he's an excellent player, and I think, you know, moving to Pittsburgh was a perfect city for him.
Doesn't care enough about the team, doesn't care enough about playing defense to have guys buy into it, but he can score goals. He's got to be your third or fourth best player.
Final question, today being Halloween, what is the scariest sight in the NHL? By which I mean, you know, player X wanting to fight you, player Y coming down the wing with speed, or player Z all alone on a breakaway.
I'm going to say right now it's Nikolaj Ehlers coming down the wing. I think he surprised a lot of people with that quick release. So for me, I'll please the hometown fans right now, and I'll say Nikolaj Ehlers.
I think it's Evander Kane coming at you in a helicopter.
Let's go to Cheers and Jeers to wrap it up.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra, I know you're going to cheer, so what's it going to be?
Yeah, it's always a cheer. I'm going to cheer Dale Weiss, first career NHL hat trick last night for the Montreal Canadiens. I'm going to keep it local. Good Winnipeg boy. Good on him for getting that hat trick for the Habs last night.
Richard?
That's a cheer, eh? Interesting. I like it. Going to the Winnipeg boy. I'm going to jeer Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Enough's enough. And you talked about the legacy issue, and Gary wrote about it on TSN in terms of the Ovechkin goal-scoring thing. Sidney Crosby's not part of the narrative right now, aside from this 10-year recap of his career, and that's a shame because he's got far too much natural talent to be where he is right now.
Yeah, Gary agrees with me, by the way. He told me he thinks Ovechkin will get to 700.
He always agrees with you, right? I'll wrap up Cheers and Jeers. I'm going to cheer Andrew Hammond of the Senators with his win over Detroit on Friday. He became the first NHL goalie to record 21 wins in his first 27 regular season games played. So for a guy who comes out of nowhere to have that kind of start to a year, good for Andrew Hammond, and it's a nice story.
And you like hamburgers, too.
And I like hamburgers, too. Exactly right. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our guests, Adam Proto, Arpan Basu, and of course, Jody Shelley, the Columbus Blue Jackets analyst. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, Keener Jerseys, and Royal Sports. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Alex and producer Chris, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Happy Halloween, everybody. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290.